Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. I dedicate today's program to a desperate-faced old man who stood on a corner of Highway 101 with a sign that said, "I'm at the end of my rope. Please help me." Welcome to the United States of dystopia, or the possibility of its probability. I am going to read today a grimly perceptive thesis that Charles Hillestad wrote for the North Coast Times Eagle in 2007, Life Where 9/11 is 24/7. Suppose our Far West was like the Middle East. Its continuing relevance will make itself plain as you listen, perhaps more apt this election year, when so many presidential aspirants cry for war and repression. Charles Hillestad is an attorney who has migrated from Cannon Beach to McMinnville. He is a Vietnam veteran, an experience that initially exposed him to the dystopian possibilities he writes about. Life Where 9/11 is 24/7 by Charles Hillestad. Can the average American fully comprehend what it is like to live through something like the Balkan ethnic cleansings of a few years ago, the Lebanon eruptions every decade or so, or Iraq almost any time? I doubt it. I'm not talking about the temporary disasters like Hurricane Katrina, or even man-made ones like the World Trade Center. Bad enough they were. I am talking about trying to imagine something that grinds on for years on end, where depression and desperation has largely obliterated even the hope of change. The problem is that in our lack of imagination, we can end up causing such events or ignoring them. Worse, despite our fortuitous circumstances, resources, and geography, we may not be totally immune to such madness ourselves. As the polarization of elections, the abandonment of compromise, the demonization of opponents, and the apparent belief over the past several years that the end justifies any means is starting to suggest, we could balkanize ourselves. For the last 50 years, relatively few Americans have ever experienced anything like 9/11 firsthand. A few million or so were close enough to Ground Zero in New York to smell and hear it as it happened. A few thousand in Oklahoma City lived sufficiently near the federal building to have their windows blown out when Timothy McVeigh decided to show how Americans can be good at terrorism, too. A few hundred were in the Colorado and Oregon high schools when kids went on random shooting sprees. A few dozen have been unfortunate enough to witness bombings of abortion clinics or hear the supersonic crack of a serial sniper's bullet. Terrifying terrorism events each and every one, but in this country at least, they are noteworthy for their rarity in both time and distance. Granted, they were life-disrupting events as well as life-ending for some. They scared and scarred TV spectators far and near as well as the unwilling participants. At the same time, for the most part, other than the lost loved ones and the traumatic stress syndrome, everything was not changed. For the most part, any change was only a few days or weeks or months in duration, except for comparatively minor aspects of daily life, such as taking off shoes in airport lines. The anguish, no doubt, is still there, undiminished for many, but not all, not even for those present at the scene when it happened. Frankly, an observer from another planet would be hard-pressed to see much physical difference in the daily conduct of life on our West Coast before and after those events. People still go to the malls, stand in line at movies, attend concerts, open their front doors to total strangers, and do not have bomb shelters or buried supplies. If you count in the ghettos of L.A. and other big cities where gangs and drive-by shootings are more frequent, there is some permanent change in how locals wake up each morning. In those more permanently risky places, many do wonder whether they will be lucky enough to survive the day. Nevertheless, most folks don't live in ghettos. The blood and bandages, the debris and dead children are far away. Suppose we were not so lucky. You have all seen the destruction in Iraq, Afghanistan, Lebanon, Palestine, and Israel. It's all over TV. Even if you don't watch the news, it's on the front pages of newspapers and the covers of magazines. You have seen it, or what it looks like on the big screen. Hollywood is pretty good at picturing the trauma. But have any of us who were born here in idyllic Oregon and never went ourselves where the bullets and bombs were flying ever really thought about it except in the abstract? Now is the time. The events, pictures on nightly news may have been unspeakable acts, but we do need to speak about them. So here is a mental exercise. Think about the unthinkable in concrete terms, real concrete. Imagine what is happening over there, occupying instead the very concrete laid down in your own U.S. post office zip code. Forget for the moment what Hollywood star is sleeping with whom. Picture what is happening in the Middle East happening to you and yours, where you could see outside your front door. For instance, imagine if you were afraid to go to the ironically titled Safeway for food because someone may detonate a bomb next to you in the checkout line. Imagine your nearest target in the target sights of a military jet. Still want to shop there? Do you want to play Russian roulette every time you step through the revolving doors at the market? Imagine armed guards frisking you at the doors of Albertsons, which would now be windowless, boarded up, and have huge concrete barriers out front so that no truck bomber could crash through the glass entries. Even if you are able to shop without interference, there might not be any food because of blockades or bombed out roads and airports or fearful farmers not working the fields or hoarding by suppliers. Imagine the mighty Fred Meyer grocery chains with endless rows upon rows of empty shelves. Imagine the blemished or even rotting apples. Imagine the moldy rutabagas ever making it to the dumpster. Imagine harvesting dandelion leaves from your lawn because you need them in your salad. Imagine a growling stomach that seldom stops. Imagine those pictures of children with ribs showing were yours. If there is edible food on the shelves, black market profiteers could make it so expensive you couldn't afford it. Imagine your dollars being worth little anyway. Imagine sorting through your possessions to see what you can barter or sell to put food on the table. Sorry. The Bank of America ATMs don't work anymore. Snipers might have the boxes in their crosshairs. You can't even go to church on the weekend to pray it would all stop. The bell tower on that cute little church is an obvious aiming point by others who don't like your particular choice of religion. Or once you get to church, you may discover your priest or pastor was killed. Hey, once zealots start believing they have the only true religion and are the only ones worthy of being saved, it becomes much easier to contemplate eliminating the menace of other sects by eliminating their practitioners. Or worse yet, you might hear your own preacher preaching about how the Catholics, Lutherans, Mormons, whatever congregation is down the lane, are plotting against you and how they are going to hell anyway. Praise your version of the Lord and pass the ammunition with the collection plates, so to speak. Sort of do unto others before they do unto you. Besides, there is always the excuse available that they started it first. Some in the Middle East are interpreting the Quran wording to allow bombing of others, and a distressing percentage of them seem to be trained, ordained religious leaders. What's that you say? You believe only the leaders of Muslim religion variants ever say such horrific things or encourage or justify killings? You don't think our Christian churches would ever be a party to such unchristian behavior as killing heretics? Read some history books and wonder if Joan of Arc or Oliver Cromwell or Richard the Lionhearted, Christians all, would agree. We have well-known and apparently admired TV evangelists who advocate assassinations, and I will bet they were standing by a copy of the Ten Commandments when they said it, and probably clutching a Bible, too. If attending church is dangerous, then what about a Regal movie theater for escape? The Rotary Club luncheon, perhaps? The Astoria Public Library to quietly read a magazine? Hanging out on the beach? Forget it. Crowds are equal opportunity for the guy or girl to punctuate a religious or political statement. You are forced to wonder, for example, if the beer belly brooding over there at the end of the bar in the local McMenamins is really just fat or has a row of dynamite strapped around the waist. Should you send your children to school? Schools are targeted, and so are the principals and teachers, for what they teach, for even daring to teach, period. Certainly no Friday night football, no basketball tournament. Well, what about homeschooling, you say? Okay, what books? Do you have them already? Don't expect UPS to deliver new ones. And what lessons? Can you personally teach your kids fractions, let alone calculus? It's not much staying at home either. No heat in the winter. Worse, no air conditioning in the summer. And even Astoria on the coast hit 103 degrees last year. We are fortunate in the Pacific Northwest. Temperatures rarely get above 110, even east of the Cascades. At the same time, no electricity means no power from PPL for the refrigerator to store food, assuming you have any. Of course, no gas from Northwest Natural Gas means little is available to cook it anyway. Does that Coleman camper in the attic still work? You better hope so. This can be going on not for hours or days, but months and years. There's probably no water to cook with, at least not clean water, water you can count on without thinking as we do now. That faithful faucet can become merely an ornament on the sink. Maybe you will still be drinking mineral water, but you probably won't like the minerals in it, let alone the nasty bugs that are no longer filtered out at the water treatment plant. Those and the pipelines and conduits supplying our water are also targets of opportunity. Maybe you have a well or a nearby stream. Great, assuming no one else covets it. Your great-grandparents used to dig wells and divert streams. Can you? Of course, that still does not solve the issue of what is in the water. Can you test it in any way other than your lower gastrointestinal tract? Boiling water is a good idea, as you can recall from your Boy or Girl Scout handbook, but you are probably reduced to doing so at a wood fire, since the gas and electricity no longer function. Keep in mind, you have to depend on others to keep those utilities working, and they have the same problems you do. By the way, got an axe or a saw and a means to sharpen them, if no gas or electricity? That wood doesn't cut itself. It is long, hard work, even if you do have cutting tools. There is one bright spot. You would have more free time to do the necessary things you have to do since you no longer go out for fun. The toilet is probably not working, not with either the sewer lines being blown up or the sewage treatment plant itself. Easy to destroy, hard to repair. So, get used to the stink, and not just how your own body or the communal outhouse or slit trench smells. Wait until you learn what the smell of dead bodies is like after they spend a few weeks crushed under a collapsed building. It's something your nostrils will never forget. Same for the cloying smell of burned bodies. Have you ever seen a dead body, let alone smelled one? How about thousands? Well, there is always watching Desperate Housewives on the telly, right? Wrong. There are Desperate Housewives, aplenty, but not on TV. No KMUN-FM or OPB radio. Towers get targeted, and what news arrives tends to be propaganda for somebody. Maybe there are some shortwave broadcasts available to those who bought hand-cranked radios before it all went to hell. Another bright spot. At least your arms will have something to do, even if you don't. Probably there is no mail. The post carrier's motto of neither rain nor shine nor gloom of night deterring their rounds doesn't even seem to contemplate improvised explosive devices, IEDs, nor snipers, nor suspicious homeowners. Newspapers? Maybe, if someone still has a working mimeograph machine, that is. News will be forced to travel at the speed of rumors and will be about as accurate. There are few, if any, reporters showing up in your neighborhood anyway. Reporters these days don't seem to care too much for combat zones as they used to back in Walter Cronkite's days. Maybe it's because they end up dead more often. No telephones. Sure, your landline always worked even if the power went out, but they don't work if the lines are down or the central station demolished and the repairman shot. Back to tin cans on a string, perhaps. Or smoke signals. Maybe not even that. With all the bombing and fires, smoke signals might be too hard to notice among all the other smoke and dust. The only thing you actually can rely on in the way of news is what you see with your own two eyes. No internet, certainly. No video games. iPods, maybe. at least as long as they use alkaline batteries until they run down. A game of catch then for the kids as long as you're stuck at home. Okay, but are there landmines in the field? Don't forget the snipers. It is no longer home sweet home anymore, is it? Come to think of it, do you still have a home? Your cute little ranch or Victorian might end up demolished to clear for a field of fire, or just be unlucky enough to be in a free fire zone. Perhaps your home ends up used for mortar practice. Now that sales ads about a great price for a fixer-upper is actually accurate. Of course, it's not always bad guys with bad intentions who wipe out your homeowner tax deduction. Did the person doing the targeting of something else twitch at the wrong moment? Did he do his math right in calculating the ballistics and fire a short round? Nothing is more unfriendly than so-called friendly fire accidents. Maybe your house is mistaken for harboring a suspected terrorist. Maybe the house next door is suspected of harboring a terrorist. The blast radius of bombs is pretty substantial. Either way, do you end up living in a tent in the winter as a refugee to escape the bombing? Once, you thought all you had to fear was being bitten by a mosquito with West Nile virus. What a fond memory. No matter where you live, you need money to live, but it is downright dangerous to go to work. That crate marked Coors laying at the side of the road, is it empty cardboard or concealing IEDs? The used tire dumped by the stop sign, empty or not? That freshly turned dirt in the pothole in the pavement, make you nervous? There is little to fill the car tank anyway, and if you drive, you can get shot even by the soldiers in sandbagged bunkers at intersections to protect you. Perhaps you don't notice the nervous troopers signaling you to stop or don't do it fast enough. A steel jacketed slug through the windshield works pretty well at accomplishing that. Maybe they don't know you're a patriot. You're not even safe, even if you do make it downtown, Tigard or Baker or Cannon Beach, another nicely ironic name, by the way. If you are a judge or a lawyer or a politician or a fireman, your very occupation could target you for elimination, let alone if you are a policeman or even an ordinary supporter of a particular party or religion someone doesn't like. Being a business owner doesn't make you immune. Perhaps you help or hurt someone by your mere existence. What a handy way to eliminate competition or someone not liked. Does anyone carry a grudge against you? Even if you are not singled out, there is always a possibility of a spreading fire from a deliberate bombing or a short-round artillery shell nearby, which wipes you out. Accidents happen even in war zones. It probably is a moot point anyway. Do you have any workers left, or any inventory, or anyone with any money to spend on it if you happen to finish production on something? Being a lowly laborer instead of a rich boss does not make you immune from danger going to work. Do you have the right skin coloration, the right clothing, wearing jeans or shorts, walking down Commercial in Astoria or Broadway in Seaside might get you murdered by someone who doesn't think his or her particular God wants you to wear them. Even if you dressed innocuously, do you have the right Bible, the right ID in your pocket? Maybe you better carry more than one version and hope you remember the right pocket when you are asked to produce it. You could still end up seized at random, thrown on a bus, have your hands tied behind your back and get a bullet in the head, or tortured first. Worse, you could end up on camera for your family to watch in horror as you are slaughtered like a cow. Staying home 24/7 doesn't necessarily protect you. A knock on the door could be a signal you are about to be executed. The fact that those outside the door are wearing police uniforms is no assurance. Anyone can buy or steal them. It doesn't have to be a terrorist hit squad. The uniforms might be government issued to employees on the government payroll. It could be the government itself doing the seizing, the torturing, the jailing, the execution, all on a mere suspicion or an injudicious comment against the prez or the mere falsely reported slander of the prez by a jealous neighbor. You might be able to barricade or arm yourself to defend against individual attackers for a while at least. But once the bombs or rockets start falling, you might as well be at a crap table shooting dice. These instruments of massive destruction being used these days aren't very smart for the most part. And even if they were, the people steering them might not be too smart enough to know where they should be steered. Perhaps a little terror among the populace might be deemed a good thing by those in charge of directing the high explosives. You think things were bad in New Orleans because of Hurricane Katrina? Imagine if there was not even heck of a job brownie at FEMA. Imagine aid workers, rescuers, and firemen fearful to enter helicopters to rescue you, targets. In other words, you might not be able to get to a hospital if you are hurt by a bomb or a rocket. You might not even make it, even if you are merely sick on an ordinary day without actual bombing. Highway 101 or a key bridge is likely to have been bombed long before, even if the hospital itself wasn't. As recent news reports reveal, there is reason to fear the ambulance marked with the huge Red Cross on top delivering you may be strafed, as many have in Lebanon. Think not. Ask the Israelis about their public warnings that they would do exactly that. Ask the second Sunni or Shiite suicide bomber who was waiting after the first one exploded for the medical help to arrive on the scene. Once you make it to Providence Memorial or whatever is closest, you may find there are no medical supplies or not enough beds because of the large volume of killing and maiming. Kidney dialysis or organ transplants or MRI or other fancy stuff, good luck getting an aspirin. Imagine tanks and uniformed troops everywhere. Imagine, too, lots of civilians, or at least men not in uniform, but still brandishing automatic weapons. Imagine them being pretty careless about firing off those weapons. And any bullet that goes up has to come down somewhere. Hope you're not standing in the airspace where they do. Imagine some bad guys deciding they want to use your neighborhood for a missile launch site. Imagine what happens when they do. The missile trail points back to your neighborhood, and people on the other side with even bigger missiles might hold you responsible. Imagine curfews. When was the last time you were subject to a curfew? Imagine martial law being imposed. Imagine curfew violations being enforced with steel-jacketed slugs. Why bring up such unpleasant thoughts? It can't happen here, right? After all, we have those super spooks at the CIA and the NSA and their expensive high-tech toys to ferret out bad peoples before they ever get here, right? After all, we have the ever-vigilant and no doubt super-competent Homeland Security to find all the bombs hidden in shoes. After all, we are building a 42-foot wall along several hundred miles of our many thousand miles borders, and the Border Patrol or the Minutemen won't let any bad people in. Right? Surely the wily skills of our wise wizards and ambassadors will make friends rather than enemies abroad. Right? And it's not as if we would ever have lunatic fringe groups already here to start revolutions or insurgencies for their own purposes. Black Panthers, white supremacists, right-to-life abortion clinic bombers. Americans would never kill fellow Americans or indulge in ethnic cleansing like those other uncivilized countries, would they? The Civil War, lynching, and the near eradication of Native Americans were surely just anomalies, weren't they? And just because neocons have called dissenters traitors and wished them executed merely for disagreeing with right-wing dogma does not mean they would really kill or jail dissenters if the opportunity presented itself and they thought they could get away with it, right? Right. Okay. Unlikely for the immediate future, at least, but still worth contemplating. While our far west is not the Middle East, we cannot be sanguine that our good fortune will continue forever. Do we need to be reminded by history that every single smug civilization that ever existed imagined it was incapable of being destroyed? Ask the members of the Third Reich that was supposed to last 1,000 years. Ask even the Romans. They, too, thought their particular gods or military might would protect them in perpetuity. The verdict of history is it can happen here. It will happen here if we do not consider all the possibilities and act intelligently. More importantly, and of current day relevance, we should remember the excuses of all those in charge of our country at the time of 9/11, who repeatedly alleged that driving airplanes into buildings was utterly impossible to foresee and could not even have been contemplated. Perhaps if they had indulged periodically in a similar thought process, they might have seen possibilities and taken steps to prevent them. Is that lack of foresight happening again in our present policies concerning the Middle East? In any event, you cannot know a problem unless you give it some serious thought and put yourself in the shoes of others. How can you possibly understand how others will react if you cannot understand what they are going through? We might read in the paper about how we are supposedly at war, but we certainly are not acting like it. Since we are not experiencing it firsthand, we need to devote at least some time to imagining what could happen in some detail. We need to do so before accepting at face value any facile solutions offered by any slack-jawed politicians or pundits that can be summed up in 10-second sound bites. We need to do so early on because we ultimately are responsible for what our elected leaders and allies they choose are doing or create, even if unintended or unwanted. There are consequences. Evidence suggests 9/11 may have been a consequence of some of our policies. Perhaps we would not change the policies, but why aren't we recognizing and discussing what could happen? Whether 9/11 was a consequence or not, and whether you see yourself as God-fearing or Jesus-loving, we must go through such puzzles because we need to do some cost-benefit analyses of possible consequences to others, if not to ourselves. Some of you, after doing so, might conclude our part in the Middle East is wrong. Others might go through the same analysis and conclude we need to fight them over there so we don't have to fight them over here. That's fair. Disagreement and competing points of view are what democracy are all about. The point, though, is that informed decisions should not, cannot be properly made without careful consideration, especially about something that is alien to our present personal experience of what is going on in Afghanistan, Iraq, Lebanon, Syria, Palestine, Israel, and Somalia. The future activities of someone who is forced to live where 9/11 is 24/7 cannot be predicted or even intelligently debated unless we try to understand the atmosphere of such daily fear, frustration, and derivation breeds. Start thinking, then express your opinion to those who have power, and put new ones in charge if they don't seem to listen or reveal they have not reflected on similar thought processes themselves. And that was where life where 9/11 is 24/7. Suppose our far west was like the Middle East by Charles Hillestad. And this has been Michael McCusker.